Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, under the heading of Real People. This one is entitled Up in the Air. High Life. Tightrope artist Philippe Petit looks back on a momentous walk and ahead to his next bold exploit. After I walked between the towers of the World Trade Center 50 years ago, people said, "There's no next project. How can you top being a quarter mile high in the sky?" But that's not true. I prepared for 1 year to do that walk, and when it was done, I mean, after the police who arrested me for trespassing let me go, I went on to the next walk and the next. The Louisiana Superdome, the Eiffel Tower, a section of Niagara Falls, and many others. I am not limited by what I have done. I'm motivated by what I have done. Yes, I have constraints. My body is not 18, but I don't care about age. I don't feel it. In my mind, I'm getting younger every year. I used to be a rebel and ambitious, trying to prove something. Well, I'm still a rebel and ambitious, but I have nothing to prove. I just want to do my art. I'm not collecting the longest, the highest, the most famous. I don't care about that. I'm collecting what inspires me and what I think will inspire other people. There are so many marvels around us. Nobody notices balance. People walk, and they don't even think about how amazing it is that they can stay in balance. I always say, start your day in equilibrium. Don't slump over your breakfast. Sit up straight. That way, you start the day in equilibrium. It'll make you feel better all day. I think balance keeps you energized in body and mind. That's my way of life. And this was as told to Tim Appello. Performer Philippe Petit, 74, lives near Woodstock, New York. He planned to mark the 50th anniversary of his August 7, 1974 Twin Towers walk with a gala show inside the Cathedral Church of St. John the Divine in New York City. Now, continuing on with AARP, the magazine, worried about scams? Get tips on staying safe at aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork. Now, let's look at your AARP. AARP's global reach, sharing best practices and new ideas about aging around the world. AARP has always been focused on helping Americans age well. The search for the best answers to that extends around the globe. As a global leader in aging policy, AARP is committed to sharing experiences, knowledge, and resources overseas. Good ideas have no borders, said Peter Rundlett, Vice President of International Affairs at AARP. Other countries can be learning from us, and we can be learning from them. An example of the organization's global reach occurred this year when CEO Joanne Jenkins led an AARP delegation to Africa to meet with top leaders from Kenya and Tanzania to discuss the implications of populations aging in these developing countries. If we are to build a society for all ages, where everyone has an opportunity and the right to age with independence, dignity, and purpose, we need to reach beyond our borders to engage leaders in other countries to help find solutions, Jenkins says. The visit paid quick dividends. During Jenkins' meeting with President Hussein of Tanzania's region of Zimbabwe, he announced that he would work to lower its universal pension age from 70 to 60, dramatically improving financial security for older adults. In recent years, AARP's international team has worked with specialists on aging and policy leaders on every continent except Antarctica. The result of these learning journeys is a classical and policy exchange on the best ideas for aging well and preparing for a graying population. Here are some of the innovations on aging going on around the world. Taiwan pioneered a system for accrediting age-friendly hospitals by evaluating four facets of health care: administration policy, communication and service, care procedures, and physical environment. In recent years, the program has grown to include public health centers, clinics, and long-term care institutions. Singapore gives subsidies to young adults living in buildings that primarily house elder residents. A similar program offers a cash grant to motivate people to move in with relatives or to purchase a home close to family members for mutual care and support. The multi-generational living programs encourage intergenerational interaction. The World Health Organization, headquartered in Switzerland, spearheaded an accreditation program for age-friendly cities and communities. AARP now runs the U.S. version of this initiative, counting nearly 900 age-friendly localities across 11 states recognized for their walkable neighborhoods, diverse transportation options, affordable housing, and community activities. Japan has adopted a watchover service where postal office staff nationwide monitor the well-being of older adults and send updates to family members. The goal is to reduce social isolation using existing infrastructure. During postal employee visits, older adults can also receive assistance with scheduling medical appointments, booking travel, and other services online. AARP's global engagement is critical as more countries, in some cases poorer ones, scramble to get plans in place to support aging populations, Rundlett says. The demographic shift that's coming toward us is inevitable, and we need to think about ways in which this will impact our societies so we can help people age well. AARP International publishes its findings every fall in The Journal, an award-winning periodical that Rundlett describes as coffee table book on aging. To learn more about AARP's overseas efforts and to request a free copy of the latest edition of The Journal, go to aarpinternational.org. Also from the magazine, under Your AARP, How We're Fighting for You, AARP takes on retirement savings. According to a new AARP survey, many people are feeling better about their overall financial health. Although the hard truth is that saving for retirement still lags. Among adults who regularly save for retirement, only about 4 in 10 men believe they are saving enough to be secure in retirement, and just 3 in 10 women. That's why AARP is working hard to ensure people 50-plus have tools and resources to help boost retirement savings and manage their financial health after retiring. Here is some of what we offer. Work and save. AARP wants workers to have an easy way to save for retirement on the job, so advocating for states to offer public-private retirement savings accounts is top priority. Work and save programs, including auto IRAs, can provide an easy pathway for workers to start saving from their regular paycheck. 20 states have enacted work and save programs. Check out your state here. AARP.org/save-for-retirement. This is pre-retirement. A new public service advertising campaign created by AARP and the Ad Council encourages people thinking about retirement to start planning for their financial future, even if you're not sure where to begin. This is retirement, or this is pre-retirement, can help. The site's simple quiz can assist you in gaining clarity on your current financial situation. After completing the quiz, you'll receive a free, personalized retirement savings action plan that suggests solutions for taking control of your financial future. AARP membership is not required, and the site is free for all. Find this at This is preretirement.org. AARP Retirement Calculator. Most people aren't sure if they are saving enough for retirement or even how much they should save. The AARP Retirement Calculator can help you determine how long your money may last. The tool can be used on a smartphone, tablet, or computer. Go to aarp.org/retirement/retirement-calculator. The AARP Virtual Community Center. They regularly host virtual programs, including webinars and speaker series that highlight retirement readiness. Select programs are available on demand, such as the recent webinar, Preparing Your Finances Ahead of Retirement. Find the schedule at aarp.org/virtual-community-center. And check out the AARP website, where you'll find news articles and informative videos focusing on retirement. Go to aarp.org. Now we're going to look at the Prevention Magazine Secrets of Aging Well. We're starting a new chapter here, Stress Management. The biggest killer of modern times, stress, is linked to 6 leading causes of death, including heart disease, according to the American Psychological Association. Learn how stress affects your brain and body, strategies to keep your body and mind in balance and regulate emotions, and ways to bring greater ease into each day. Lighten up. Seek out more opportunities for humor and harness its powerful benefits. Laughter helps activate and relieve your stress response, soothe tension, and improve your mood. Getting a good laugh can do much more than put you in a positive mood. It shakes tension out of your body, takes your mind off problems, and helps you see the bright side in life. But laughter has many other benefits. It helps fight disease in the short and long term, boost your immunity, stimulate your organs, and increase your lifespan. It's also what you need most during times of stress. In a study published by the National Library of Medicine, spontaneous laughter was associated with greater reduction in cortisol levels than usual activities. This suggests laughter is a potential adjunct medical therapy to improve well-being. When we experience stress, our brain releases cortisol and adrenaline, which causes our blood pressure and heart rate to go up, muscles to tense, and the immune system to take a hit, says Karen Buxman, neurohumorist and the author of Lead with Levity. And humor is an antidote to all those negative effects. When we laugh, the brain releases hormones that lower inflammation, boost heart health, relax your muscles, and enable you to concentrate and connect with others, Boxman says. But that's not all. Finding something funny reduces pain and kickstarts the chemical immunoglobulin, a powerful respiratory illness fighter, says Stephen M. Sultanoff, Ph.D., a psychology professor at Pepperdine University. Humor is a shortcut to reframing, Buxman says. It can allow us to accept the absurdity of a tough time and reclaim some power over the narrative. Gradually, the perks of humor add up, leading people who regularly savor it to have less anxiety and depression than those who don't. Pointing out the hilarity in tragedy helps us move forward so we can better deal with crisis, Buxman says. If you have days when finding the funny seems impossible, you're not alone. Consider this your guide to getting and giving bigger laughs. All day, every day, nurture your sense of humor. You can't expect a single short workout to transform you instantly, and you can't rely on one laugh to solve all your problems. You need to create an intentional and consistent practice to reap the positives in your life. Commit to a few daily habits you know will make you smile, like sending friends something funny you saw online. Similar to how it is with gratitude, when you force yourself to look for things that are funny, you start to see it in everything. Another way to notice the silliness, keep notes on the ridiculous things you see throughout the day and share one with a family member later. I religiously use my notes iPhone app. If I have a funny thought, it comes out there as a little idea to look back on, says Sarah Pappalardo, the co-founder and editor of Reductress, a satirical women's magazine. When anxious or sad, give your brain a break. We've all done it. You're stressed to the max about everything, and then you relax by watching a serial killer documentary. Doing something tense is not allowing you to switch out of fight or flight mode. We're not saying you can't watch a grim thriller, but also take 15 minutes to do something lighthearted to give your mind a breather before you pummel it with more intensity. When I need a quick pick-me-up, it's dog pictures that do it for me, says Heather Chelan, who has a devoted online following for her catchy songs about everything from how therapy is cool to her fear of spiders in her shoes. It's a great way to get a happiness boost without getting sucked into your phone. When telling jokes, look to relate. Not all jokes are created equal. The big psychological benefits come from positive forms of humor, which are affiliative, jokes you can share with others and bond over, and self-enhancing, allowing you to find the levity in a situation, rather than aggressive, jokes made at someone else's expense, or self-defeating, according to a study in the International Journal of Clinical and Health Psychology. A lot of my jokes are about toxic relationships. I try to use crazy circumstances and over-the-top characters to make people laugh, rather than making fun of specific groups of people, says Daphne Springs, an actor and a comedian. Your intention also matters. Comedy has the power to make people feel less alone in a situation, she says. Thinking about how your words can bring different people together rather than divide them is a good place to start. Not the one-liner type? You don't have to be the funniest person in the room to spread joy. Think about small ways you can weave humor into the fabric of your life. I keep a fake Elvis Presley ID on me to give people when I'm checking into hotels. It always jolts people out of autopilot when they notice it. And I've even been given upgrades, he says. I also keep a little bottle of bubble solution in my car, so when I'm stuck in traffic, I can blow bubbles out the window. I don't know that it makes anyone laugh, but it's certainly amusing to see. There are so many ways to make everyday interactions and tasks more playful. If you want to be funny, just be honest. I use humor to talk about health, particularly balance, which is not a 2-pound weight in each hand. It's more like being a hermit and eating junk for 5 days straight and then putting it together, doing some glam, and drinking your water. You can be a healthy person who still goes through dark times, and you don't have to hide or apologize for it. Right now, everyone is desperate to laugh. It's a craving like sex or hunger. If you feel like you have nothing to laugh about, dig into your trauma and find out what's wrong with you and start there. I'm only half joking. The funniest people just tell the truth and own that they're a little embarrassing. What's deranged about your life? Being able to laugh at that is my secret weapon. And Allie Weiss, comedian, writer, and host of the Tales of Taboo podcast, wrote that section. Humor is empowering. It's medical and healing. I was working in insurance a few years ago when I realized I needed an escape from my job, so I started creating funny videos. I try to make content that is relatable, but touches on somewhat uncomfortable topics. Lately, I've been focused on body positivity for everybody. I'm a naturally slim woman on a weight gain program, and I'm out here trying to normalize exercising to get bigger and to show women you can be sexy and confident at any size. I hope when people watch my videos, they not only laugh and get that endorphin boost, but feel empowered to find the positivity in their life. I want to show that life isn't about what happens to you, but it's about how you respond to it, and it's okay to see comedy in it. And this was contributed by Lala Milan, actor and comedian and purveyor of free medical laughter on YouTube. Now, moving to the bulletin, a Q&A with Amy Grant. In July 2022, you had a traumatic brain injury from a biking accident and had to relearn the words to your songs. How are you coping? I've had to be very patient with myself. I have had a lot of good, hard cries, and I went through depression. But everybody is recovering from something. That's life. If nothing else, we recover every day from the shock of what it means to age. My memory used to be my superpower. Now I can't trust my memory. But there are hidden gifts in everything. What advice do you have for people whose lives are upended in a heartbeat? Our mindsets, the stories we tell ourselves, become our realities. Find the toolkits that you need to move forward. You've talked about how the healing process gave you time to reflect on some larger societal issues and your own personal journey. For 1 month after my bike accident, I didn't leave my house. I couldn't be on the phone or see any screens. And I read The Choice, Embrace the Possible by Dr. Edith Eva Eger. She was born in Hungary, and she became an Olympics gymnast. She was eventually sent to Auschwitz. That book most affected my recovery, and I found the Book of Forgiving, the fourfold path for healing ourselves and our world by Desmond Tutu and his daughter, Mufu Tutu. It's about how apartheid devastated so many families and how they process the act of forgiving. Sometimes the person you have to forgive the most is yourself. During COVID, you had open-heart surgery to correct a birth defect. Then, following the accident, shoulder surgery and an operation to remove a cyst from your throat. How does it all change your view? I'm so glad I'm here, but I have to be more intentional about my health. I now drink non-alcoholic beer, for example. I discovered swimming in 2021 and joined the YMCA because I travel a lot and there is a YMCA in most towns. I'm not back to riding a bike yet because I still have some balance issues, but I'm working on it. You've talked about how physical healing requires you to be emotionally grounded. How do you manage that? I wait until the stillness finds me. I have a daily ritual of connecting to myself. I have a cup of coffee and stand with my bare feet on the grass. I welcome myself to the day. Less than a week ago, I was so upset about something, but I went outside in the grass that night, and I sat there in silence. But I could see that I was a tiny part of a big picture, and I stayed until I felt peace. You have been deeply involved in philanthropy. Was there a moment you can recall when that instinct developed? When I was 10 years old, my family went to Sarasota, Florida, and my mother gave me 4 quarters for my allowance. There was a fantastic five and dime that sold sea monkeys, but we started attending a church there, and I knew it was important to tithe. When they passed the collection plate, I had those 4 quarters in my pocket, and I was like, grrr. It was a fight, but I put one of those quarters in the plate. And that afternoon, I was on the diving board at the pool, and I saw something shiny on the bottom. I dove down, and it was a quarter. I felt like there was a puzzle in the universe and that I was connected. Connection is important in your life. What can we do about the epidemic of loneliness, especially in older people? Establishing some sort of community is essential. Whether it's finding a church community or a YMCA community or an AA community, nobody does anything big by themselves. As we get older, some things fade, understandably, but problem solving actually increases. To me, the adventure is connecting need and surplus. I love gathering in purposeful community. The best we can give each other is our presence, actually showing up for one another. What's the best way to motivate ourselves? My first mother-in-law taught me a prayer. She said, "Lord, lead me today to those I need and those that need me." I said, "Man, what a way to approach a day. Lead me to those I need and those that need me." We live very polarized times. What gives you hope? What I have said for decades is that I can't control anyone else's choices, but I can control mine. We have to be intentional with the life we have. One great thing about being in your 60s is that you no longer feel the pressure to make your mark in life. So I'm looking at other people my age and saying, if we want to see change, it has to be our generation that does it. We're in the perfect place. We've done what it is we're going to do, but we're not dead yet. And there again, this was Amy Grant being interviewed by Lana Nash. With the little bit of time we have left, let's look at some milestone birthdays. Jimmy Fallon, September 19th, celebrates 10 years hosting late-night franchise The Tonight Show this year. He's 50. Rosie Perez, September 6th, veteran actor, co-stars with Billy Crystal in the upcoming Apple TV Plus thriller Before. Al Roker, Rosie Perez was 60. Al Roker, August 20th. Today, personality, authored a mystery novel, Murder on Demand, published in April. Al turned 70. Smokey Bear, August 9th. A massive carved sculpture of the forest-loving character is located in South Dakota. Smokey turned 80. Michael Douglas, September 25th. Veteran big screen actor recently portrayed Benjamin Franklin in an Apple TV Plus series. Michael is 80. Sophia Loren, September 20th. Screen legend starred in 2020's The Life Ahead, which was directed by her son. Sophia is 90. Now, another money-saving tip in the dental category, be a skeptical patient. Before green-lighting expensive dental work, take a pause. Do online research so you can ask the tough questions. Do you really need an implant, or would a much cheaper bridge do just fine? Why do fillings always need to be replaced? Always ask for a range of options. And check out standalone dental plans if you don't have dental coverage. Through your health plan, shop for a standalone plan. Compare prices at ehealthinsurance.com. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And I do thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.